Welcome to Special Education Matters. I'm your host, Michael Bull, and I'm the proud father of an adult son with autism. Hey, everybody. Today, we're diving into the critical role of special education advocates with our guest, Sarah Baum. Sarah transitioned from being an education specialist in public schools to becoming a non-attorney advocate for families navigating the special education system. We'll explore what exactly a special education advocate does, how Sarah's classroom experience informs her advocacy work, and why having an advocate can make a significant difference in a child's educational journey. Sarah will also share her insights on the challenges facing special education today and offer advice for parents looking to become better advocates for their children. So let's get started. Sarah Baum, welcome to the program. Great to have you here today.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Well, you work as an advocate for individuals with special needs in school systems, but that really isn't where you got started. So we want to talk about your background in a moment. But first, you now transition to an advocate. If you're not familiar as a parent, let's say, with what an advocate does, can you help us understand that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, there's a lot of confusion on the differences between, for example, a special education attorney versus a special education advocate. And I do put in all of my emails that I'm a non-attorney advocate. So I'm not allowed to give legal advice or interpret the law or file for due process. So essentially, I serve as a guide to families who have children with exceptional needs. So whether their child is on what's called a 504 plan, mm-hmm. or an individualized education program, which is called an IEP, or if the parents even have concerns that their child might have a disability and they're really struggling in school, my job is helping educate them on the process for special education and helping them obtain the services and support that their child requires to be able to make progress in their education and reach their full potential.
So if I'm a parent, I'm going through the process, maybe I'm just don't have the background to understand how it all works, or mm-hmm. I'm frustrated. Are you somebody that would come to meetings with me and then somebody maybe I could talk to and share my frustrations and
Absolutely.
Those sorts of things?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't really matter how well educated you are. I've worked with parents who are clinical psychologists or attorneys, a special education teacher. I even worked with another advocate and supported her, because there's so many layers to special education. So it's kind of like you have these three different worlds colliding. You have legal component, you have education component, and then you have disabilities. And then to top that all off, it's your child. So for example, with my advocate client, she knew mm-hmm. all the processes, but because that was her child, she had so much emotion. It's very difficult to remain objective when it's your own child. And so she wanted another person there who could kind of see things from a bird's eye view, so to speak, mm-hmm. and not be too close to it. So, to answer your question, I accompany parents to meetings. I'll prepare them for the meetings, and any issues that the child is experiencing in the school, I help to get resources that is going to help that child succeed and be able to overcome any obstacles.
Okay, got it. And just to finish up here, it's kind of like a doctor shouldn't diagnose themselves, and a lawyer shouldn't be their own attorney, even though they might know what's going on. They're just going to be too stressed out or emotional. I know I was in these situations.
Yeah.
Let's turn now to how you got to becoming an advocate. Now, you worked in the classroom for a number of years as an educational specialist, special education teacher as well. How did you go from doing that to what you're doing now?
Yeah, that's such a great question. So, like you said, I was an education specialist in public schools in Orange County, and I actually really loved my job. I loved teaching my students. I had wonderful coworkers that were very collaborative. I even had a ton of support from my principal, which can be, a big issue for special education teachers. Because they kind of, get on an island, so to speak, sometimes. So for the last several years of being an education specialist, I worked in elementary school in what's called a resource setting. So I would have students that were primarily in general education classes, and they were on an IEP, so they got pull out services where they would come to my room to work on things and then push in where I would go into their classroom to support them. So I would have students from kindergarten all the way to sixth grade. So potentially I could have a student on my caseload for 7 years. And as a result of that, I developed really close relationships with the parents of my students, and came to really care deeply about, wanting what was best for the students. So, and I think this is especially like I noticed it more after COVID, that I noticed this huge discrepancy between parents who had an advocate or an attorney, or they were otherwise savvy about the special education process.
Interesting.
Yeah, versus parents who didn't have that. So, the parents that did have that, their child would get like way better quality of education. And the parents that didn't have that, often their children would kind of get the bare minimum. And so I found myself at times after IEP meetings, and this was at a time when most of the meetings were virtual. So if a meeting didn't go well, or I could tell the parent was upset, I would call them from my personal cell phone and kind of explain why things had happened a certain way and like, here's what you need to do now. And we never had this conversation. So I was, advocating for families, but it felt kind of this moral dilemma. Like, I'm not supposed to be doing this, like my boss is the district, they wouldn't want me to be sharing this. And then the other thing is, I worked with a lot of advocates, and there's a lot of good advocates out there, and developed respect for them and became curious about, how did they get into this? And then found myself sometimes in IEP meetings thinking like, oh, I wish the advocate had asked for this because I'm not allowed to, bring that up. If I was an advocate, I would have, questioned this and brought up this. So it intrigued me. So I would say the last 2 years that I was an education specialist, I was kind of preparing for being an advocate by doing trainings and networking with advocates and attorneys in California, because there's no like clear roadmap to become an advocate. So I wanted to make sure I was doing things the right way. So yeah, that's what led me to this.
So you're basically a stealth undercover advocate for a little while.
Yeah, kind of, or at least, stealth and training.
So it does sound like equity is what motivated you, and it is an inherently unfair system that those who can advocate get the best, and those who are the most vulnerable get the worst. So that's quite frustrating. So thank you for your work. Well, let's talk about parents a little bit. So, I know it's important for you to empower parents, and but what are some of the things you say, like you first meet with a parent, or they come to you for one reason or another? At that point, they're probably frustrated, I would guess. And what are some of the things you start to talk about right away with them?
Yeah, so generally speaking, there's two types of parents that reach out to me. So I have a lot of connections with psychologists who do educational assessments. So sometimes they'll assess the child, and then they'll tell the parents, like, hey, I know you're happy with their education, but I'm finding a ton of holes. So I want to refer you to this advocate. So those parents, when they contact me, they're not necessarily frustrated.
Oh.
They just want more information and for me to kind of check things out. And then, like you said, you have the parents who are frustrated for whatever reason, their child's not making progress, or, you know, like there's been communication issues, or they don't think their child's in the right setting, you know, those sorts of things. So I kind of, you know, tailor my approach to the needs of the family. And typically my process is that I'll have parents fill out an intake questionnaire where they can choose to upload any documentation, such as their child's current IEP. And then I do an initial consultation with them. So I kind of have an idea of what is going on, and I can make the meeting as efficient as possible. You know, and then some concerns, it's like, okay, well, this doesn't, you know, this sounds like it could be easily resolved. Here's what I suggest you do. And then if you have any issues, you know, feel free to come back to me. And then there's other situations that, you know, like, okay, there's some issues here. You know, I could support you in this way. Here's what I would do, type of thing. And then there's, you know, some of them are really, really egregious, you know, things that the district has done. And it's not, I just want to clarify, it's not, by and large, the IEP team members are not the ones to blame. So,
okay.
You know, they tend to have a heart for helping kids, and their heart's in the right place, but they do not have enough resources from the district to be able to, you know, be successful. Like, the district's not setting them up for success because their caseloads are way too big, and there's right. just not enough time in the day. So, so for those families, I'll say, okay, I'd love to look through your paperwork, and, you know, you might actually need a referral to an attorney at this point, because, you know, there's a certain statute of limitations, and, you know, they can get compensated for, you know, costs that they've incurred for outside therapy or whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So would you recommend, I think a parent, you're probably going to have a bias towards this answer, but should a parent start with an advocate right away like yourself? And that's what I meant by the bias comment. Or do you think parents could go ahead and start on their own, and then if things don't go the way they're hoping, that's when they should involve an advocate? Of course, keeping in mind, as a parent, maybe I don't know what is possible, so I don't know if I'm getting all the services I could actually get.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the last thing you said, like, you don't know what you don't know, right?
Mm-hmm.
So most people will say, like, oh, you don't need to get an advocate involved. Like, you only get an advocate involved when there's issues. And that's not necessarily true. So, you know, the clients that I've gotten that have been referred to me that thought everything was fine, you know, that's certainly an example where I was able to help kind of be proactive and nip things in the bud before they started going in a wrong direction. So,
do you want to share, like, do you have a success story or just a family that you could share that maybe would help us all understand how the process works when an advocate is involved?
Yeah, certainly. So, I had a family with, I'm going to try to be very vague because obviously it's confidential.
Yeah, no worries.
had a young child, and the district that they were in did an assessment, and they were proposing to place him in a self-contained special education setting.
Okay.
And because of the data and the assessment, so he had a lot of strengths, cognitive strengths, pre-academic, and he had really good language and social skills. So the data didn't justify him being placed in a restrictive setting,
okay.
such as special education setting.
Because it's supposed to be the least restrictive environment, right?
Yeah. So, okay. You know, this districts are obligated to educate students with their typically developing peers to the maximum extent.
Sure.
And exhaust, you know, resources or exhaust, you know, things like accommodations, services, even a 101 aid. So we were going to be negotiating with at the district level to try to get him into a less restrictive setting. And right before we were about to have that meeting, parents moved to a different town, different district.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so this IEP hadn't even been implemented yet. And so I reached out to the district, to the new district, and I was like, hey, we have kind of an unusual situation here. You know, parents are in agreement. And the new district wasn't really obligated to make any changes because, you know, that's that wasn't even their assessment, you know. So but you know, we just knew that this wasn't appropriate for the child. So I think a lot of times what can happen is if a child is placed in an inappropriate setting in the beginning, like say pre-K, kindergarten, first grade, if they're placed like in a self-contained classroom when that's not appropriate for them, then you've kind of changed their trajectory because those classes tend to be a lot more slower paced. They're probably not receiving, or they're probably not with peers that are modeling appropriate behaviors, so that can impact their behaviors.
Sure.
And you'll often see a gap widening, not as a result of their disability, but as a result of the setting that they're placed in. That's why the setting is so important. So anyway, for this case with the new district, I was able to negotiate a trial for the student to be fully in general education.
Not the trial where there's a judge and a jury, but
no, sorry.
I mean, no, I know what you meant. I was just teasing. So in a classroom.
Try this out.
A test, a pilot, a trial.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thanks for clarifying that. You know, where he was in a general education class, he was receiving the supports that he needed, and he's thriving. You know, he's accessing and able to do all the academics. He's, you know, having really positive social interaction with peers. And, you know, that's just extremely rewarding because, my gosh, if he had been placed in that different setting, like, we don't know how that would affect his future, you know, his career when he's an adult, his ability to go to, you know, college if he chooses to, those types of things. But we're giving him the chance that he deserves to demonstrate that he, you know, this is, you know, he can be with his typically developing peers. So that was pretty cool.
And these sorts of things, maybe I don't want to say sadly is the right word, but may only be the result of an outside advocate like yourself or somebody else who can come in and help push for that and understands how the system works.
Yeah, I mean, parents have a tendency, and, you know, rightly so, to want to trust the school team. And I'm not saying that IEP teams aren't trustworthy or that you can have an amazing IEP team that's very collaborative, that's doing all the right things, but ultimately, they work for the school district, and the school district has limited resources. So they might not be allowed to share all of the resources that are available with parents. They're, you know, kind of bound to not share all of that information because it impacts the budget.
Sure.
So that's where someone like me can come in and say, you know, actually, this is available, and here's the data that we need to show that this is appropriate for the child.
Yeah, because you understand how the system works. So
right.
Speaking of all that, we're coming towards the end of our time here. What do you see, based on your experience, the future of special education? Is it going to be those who negotiate best get the best situations, or is there any hope for that the system itself will change so that there's more equity and that everybody gets more?
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to be dismal about things, but I know at least in California that, you know, following the pandemic, districts had COVID funds. So they had some additional funding to, you know, hire additional staff members, do more trainings, that sort of thing. As of this school year, that funding has dried up. So there's become kind of this mass exodus of teachers in general and special education teachers specifically. And so the outcomes aren't great for kids. So that's why it's incredibly important for parents to educate themselves on their rights. And, you know, be the best advocate that they can be for their child. And that's something that I help with. You know, and if parents aren't able to afford an advocate, there's plenty of training programs. There's plenty of free webinars. I would just suggest to get, you know, plugged in with other families that have children with similar needs. So you can be the best advocate for your child, because ultimately parents are the experts on their child. They're equal IEP team members, and they have a right to meaningfully participate in the IEP process for their child. And it's very confusing. So the first step is to educate yourself on the process.
Gotcha. Well, Sarah, thanks so much for your time today. Where can people get in touch with you? I'll be sure to include all this in the show notes as well.
Yeah, of course. So the best way to get in touch with me is to go to my website. So that's empoweryouadvocacy.com. And from there, you can go to, actually on the homepage there, you can click on Get in Touch. And that will direct you to my intake questionnaire. And then you can schedule an initial consultation with me.
All right. Sounds good. Again, thanks, Sarah. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for listening to another edition of Special Education Matters. For more information, including show notes, head to our website, csnlg.com/listen. And if you like what you hear, please consider giving us a review on iTunes. Those reviews bring us lots of happiness. I'm your host, Michael Bull, and we will talk again soon.